It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on Newstalk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. This is the Sandler Training Hour, and I'm your host, Jim Stevens. Each weekend, we bring you talent in the Sandler world from all over North America and, in fact, far reaches of the earth. There's a lot of folks in Sandler who are extremely talented. I'm honored to have as my guest today Hamish Knox. Hamish is a Canadian, and he's the author of two Sandler books. Welcome, Hamish. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Give a shameless plug for the two books that you have written that are making a big splash in the Sandler world.
Thanks, Jim. As I say when I'm out networking, I write books on topics no one likes to talk about. So my first book is Accountability, The Sandler Way, Developing a Leadership Mentality in 20 Minutes a Week. And the second book, which came out in September of last year, is Change the Sandler Way, Understanding the Human Dynamics that Cause New Initiatives to Succeed.
Books nobody wants to really face. Change is that one of those things that we think it's a good idea as long as somebody else has to change. But if have to change, yeah. I'm not sure that I'm all that keen about it. Listeners, if you'd like to hear Hamish on our website, you can download the audio file for a previous recording where we covered his book on accountability. But today we're going to focus on your book on change. Set it up on the tee for us, Hamish. What are some of the key things a person needs to think about as they're beginning to face change?
The first thing that we need to accept, Jim, is that change is actually really easy. Change is like flipping a light switch. Today, we don't have health benefits, and tomorrow we do have health benefits. Today, we use this type of software program, and tomorrow we'll use that type of software program. Or, today our office is located in this part of the city, and tomorrow it'll be located in that part of the city. And I appreciate that all those things I mentioned are not that simple. You typically don't literally move an entire office or an entire company overnight, but that's really what it is. Change is an on or an off switch. The challenge that leaders have is they've got these squishy emotional things called people in the organization, and they don't actually go through a change. They go through what we call transition. So change is external and impersonal. Transition is internal and very, very personal. And what the challenge that leaders have is by the time they actually go out and announce the change, they have actually gone through the transition themselves, except they had to go through that transition 6, 9, 12, 18 months beforehand when they first started working on what change is going to happen and how this change is going to benefit the company and what change we're going to do. So they've already gone through all of that emotional transition, and then when they roll out the change to their employees, they've forgotten about it. So when everyone doesn't put up their hand and goes, boss, great idea. Can't imagine why we didn't do this before. They're confused, and then they tend to get frustrated. That's the key frame for today is change is real easy. It's that transition part that we all go through that is the hard part and is actually the focus of my book.
I think there's a direct correlation between how readily your team adopts change and how much you prepare them for it. And I concur with what you're saying, Hamish. I have in my career in the businesses that I've owned and run many times announced a change that I've been working on for months and months. And then when everybody gives me that deer in the headlights, I'm thinking, what's wrong with them? Well, it's the first time they've heard it. I just threw a bucket of cold water on them. What did you expect?
Exactly.
So how do we warm up our people for transition, those squishy things we call humans?
Well, really, the whole part of transition starts with your outlook on life. And this is a Sandler concept we call the belief wheel that actually the leaders I work with have adopted the belief wheel for all parts of their leadership and their management to their people. When they have to have a difficult conversation, they'll actually pull out the belief wheel and work through it with their direct report. So the belief wheel all starts with your outlook, and your outlook is one of limitation or one of possibility. And that can be glass half empty, glass half full is the easy way to think about that. And your outlook then informs your belief. So if I have an outlook of limitation, my beliefs will tend to be that change is bad, and that means all change is bad. That'd be a blanket statement. My beliefs inform my judgments. That's the next part of the belief wheel. So if my belief is all change is bad, my judgment is that this change is bad. And let's use a sales example. I'm a salesperson and you're my manager. You've just announced that my compensation plan is changing. Yeah. New compensation plan. My belief is all change is bad. My judgment, therefore, is this change is bad. I ignore any information that may be contrary to that. Maybe actually the new compensation plan is better for me. My judgments inform my actions or my inactions. And in this case, case, my actions are going to be, well, I'm just going to follow my old compensation plan. I'm just going to do the things that make me comfortable and benefited me in the past. Those actions or inactions create results. And of course, in this context that we're working with, my actions are going to create results that actually cause me to earn less money because I'm not following a new compensation plan. Those results then reinforce my belief, oh, I've earned less money. I earned less money because of this change. Therefore, all change is bad. Copy, paste, repeat over and over and over again.
Right, right. And it is a cycle that we are in many ways programmed to follow. But I think most people probably are unaware of their own biases when it comes to their beliefs and judgments. So what do we do to wake ourselves up to the things that may be self-limiting?
As leaders, there's three gifts that a leader can give their people, and those gifts are permission, protection, and potency. And in the context of change, permission means giving them permission to feel the things that they're going to feel. My eldest is 4.5 right now, and one of the talk tracks that I have with her is it's okay to be upset, but it's not okay to punch your sister.
Good.
So giving her permission to feel the things that she's feeling, and so giving your employees permission to feel the things that they're feeling, give them also the protection that when they do express the things that they're feeling, you're not going to use that as a moment to lash out or, as we say, use it as a gotcha management moment.
Right, right.
And say, you know, just suck it up, Jim. Get on with the program. This is happening. You know, that's going to actually cause your employee to probably stall out in their transition. Mm. And then finally, potency is giving them the tools and the resources to succeed with the change. Now, one of the things that leaders have to accept, though, is the people who got them to this point in their company's history may not be the people who are going to get them beyond this change. And there could be some critical people or people who you believe are critical to your success in the organization who publicly will support you and say, yep, great idea, and then come into your office and say, you know, Jim, I just can't get on board with this.
Yeah.
And so we have to accept that there are going to be people who are going to move on from our company as part of this transition. So to wake ourselves up, we give the people permission to feel all these things that they're feeling, but then we as leaders are allowed to have a conversation with them about the things that they're feeling, because there are four stages of transition that everyone's going to go through. The first one is denial, and probably all of your listeners have experienced that stage at some point, probably in a personal context. You know, you think of the child whose parents announced that they're moving away, right? They're moving to a new city because mom or dad got a job and we got to move away, and, you know, they've got to leave all their friends and their school behind. And, you know, the denial is, this isn't happening to me. In context with salesperson whose compensation plan is changing, this can't happen to me. This isn't happening to me.
Right.
So that's the first stage that all of us go through, right?
Right.
We leaders
right.
go through it beforehand. We need to give our people permission to
experience,
allow
that
them to deny that it's
yes.
happening, because
right.
they are going to do it no matter what we say or do.
Right, good point.
And some people will never get out of the denial stage. They're the ones who are probably going to move on. The next stage that they go through is what we call resistance. There's a cliche out there that it's the quiet ones you got to watch, and that really applies in resistance. There are people in an organization that when a change is announced, they very quickly move through denial and they go right into resistance, and outwardly their words are, yep, Jim, onside, love it, think it's a great idea, and then they go back to their desk and either passively or actively resist doing the things that need to be done in order to implement that change successfully. So it's a behavior thing.
Yeah.
And when we say it's the quiet ones you got to watch, it's you're watching their behavior because that will tell you all you need to know about whether or not that person is going to support you.
That's a good point.
Now, if they get through the resistance stage, and this is where we talk about permission, protection, and potency, in the resistance stage, this is where we as leaders start to wake up our employees to the cycle that they may be in this belief wheel by having conversations with them. And in the book, there's some examples of how to have those conversations. Once they get through that stage, they get to what we call exploration. And exploration is that stage where they start to think, okay, you know, Hamish said we're trying to get here, and he said that we need to do it this way, but you know what? If I do it this way, I can get to the same mountaintop that Hamish wants me to get to. And that's great, because once employees start exploring, now they're starting to buy in, and now they're starting to make the change theirs and own it. And then from there, the last stage that they're going to get into is commitment. And we don't say acceptance, we say commitment, because we're talking about behavior. And in change, what we are doing is changing our behavior. So the best thing for leaders to do in the commitment stage, once they see employees get to commitment stage, leverage them as peer coaches for the people who are still in exploration. Don't force it on them. Go and ask if they would be comfortable with that. But it's like the child, you know, you take your kids to grandma, grandpa's place, and you're driving home, and one of your kids says, yeah, grandma and grandpa said a lot of really smart things this weekend. Made me think. Outwardly, you're saying, yeah, you know, son, grandma and grandpa, they got some really good wisdom. And internally, you're thinking, I've been saying that stuff to you for 9 months. Why did it take grandma or grandpa to make it resonate with you? And it's because sometimes it can't be mom or dad.
Right.
Or it can't be the manager or the leader who says it. It's got to be one of their peers.
Right.
So leverage those committed employees to raise up those people who are in the exploration stage and help them get through that stage faster.
Let's have you give a shameless plug for your book, where people would get it, and your contact information, Hamish, in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim. So two places to get the Change the Sandler Way or Accountability the Sandler Way. Amazon is a great place to do that. Also, the Sandler Store, which is on the Sandler website for all of our trainers, as well as the Sandler corporate page at Sandler.com. Click on the store link and you can download it from there. I'm really easy to find. The best way to reach me is Hamish, that's H-A-M-I-S-H, at Sandler, S-A-N-D-L-E-R.com.
All right, and I'm Jim Stevens. We're at area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. After this next segment of Behind the Business, we're going to connect more with Hamish and ask him to take us through additional concepts in the process of change. We're going to be specifically looking at how do we harness this concept we call transactional analysis and our communication style to have successful adventures in change. We'll be back just after this.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
The small investment that I made into Sandler Training has more than paid off tenfold on a monthly basis. I mean, I've made more in a month from the Sandler Training than I have in previous years. It's an investment in yourself.
Income would be definitely by far the most tangible results. I have quadrupled the monthly that I've been doing for the company. When I started, that amount has quadrupled. In turn, I have more than doubled my income. Pretty drastic results, I would say.
I started with Sandler about 3 months ago now. Since being here, we've doubled the revenue that we've been generating. 10 times pay for itself easily already, so I'm excited for the road ahead and highly recommend this training to anyone who's looking to generate new business sales and be successful.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local businesses. I have as my guest today Eric Fredrickson. He's one of the owners, along with his sister, whose name is Laura Brown, of the Fredrickson Health Insurance Group. And one of the things I was struck, Eric was a guest on Entrepreneur Radio. One of the things that struck me, Eric, in our previous segment is that you specialize in health insurance. You don't do liability, casualty, any of those other type of policies, so you're really a solid niche. And the other thing you said is part of the focus of your niche is small businesses. So share with our listeners a little bit about what are some of the benefits a small business owner may not be aware of that they really could be taking advantage of.
There's kind of three stools or three prongs to this chair, if you will, in terms of why having a small group health plan is beneficial to your employees and not only yourself. The first one is really a tax. Coming from the accounting background, it really resonates with me. I don't know how it resonates with everyone else, but at the end of the day, if you offer an employee benefit plan through your company, the portion that you contribute is obviously tax deductible, but the portion that the employee contributes is also tax deductible for them. The income that they pay for that health insurance isn't taxed. Therefore, you're getting essentially a 30% discount on the employee's portion and your own portion of those health insurance premiums paid.
So it really allows you to pay your employees more. They can take take home if you offer these kind of benefits.
Absolutely. Your dollar is just stretching further since Uncle Sam's not taking his portion on that.
So there's probably a fair amount of small businesses out there that believe that health insurance is just too expensive or too far out of the reach. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, all but contrary. If you're purchasing an individual plan currently, really where the benefit is, purchasing a small business plan is about 20% cheaper than purchasing the same individual plan on the open market. What insurance carriers have found is people who are fully employed working for a business are inherently healthier than someone who is just purchasing the plan individually. So the insurance carriers have reduced the premiums for essentially better quality plans.
And do you find any of the small businesses you serve are also offering coverage or putting the cost of coverage for family members?
You really got to see what outcomes does a business want to achieve. If a business is trying to really help the whole family out, you do see that, and they're not covering all of it. They might only be covering 20%, but just being able to offer it to the individuals and their families, even if you don't cover any on the family, they're at least getting a 30% discount on the tax saving side. At the end of the day, we're seeing a lot of employers not covering the family, but covering the employee to 50 to 100% and let the family either choose to be on their plan or go somewhere else.
As a small business owner myself, one of the hard things to be competitive with a major firm is some of these benefits.
Right.
So suggestions or thoughts on that?
Like a shoe, not every size of plan fits every person. So a young person who's under 30, doesn't go to the doctor, only does a wellness exam, this is a great time to be on a health savings account, where if you're older in years, you may want something that's going to cover those expensive prescriptions. So what we're finding for businesses is offering multiple plans within your business so your employees can choose which plan works best for them.
So how would our listeners reach out to you if they had a question?
You can visit our website at fredhealthins.com, or you can give our office a call. We're always there answering the phone 8 to 5 Monday through Friday at 208-375-0009.
Great. Thanks, Eric. We'll be back for another segment of Behind the Business just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a 2-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th. From 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275. And welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Hamish Knox. Hamish is the author of Accountability the Sandler Way, and his latest book is Change the Sandler Way. If you missed the first segment, Hamish has introduced us to the reality that change is easy. Transition is difficult. Talked a little bit about the belief cycle. So if I have an outlook of limitation towards change, my belief will be that change isn't good. If that's my belief, my judgment will be this change is not going to be in my best interest, which will lead to an action that may be at best resistant and at worst sabotage the efforts to change. I love that Hamish gave us three gifts we can give our employees. Number one, permission to feel. Number two, protection. Make it safe for them to go through the process of change. Number three is potency, the tools to change. And then he's concluded the last segment with the stages of change. Number one, denial. I don't believe it's happening to me. If I can grow past that, I'm going to get to that point of resistance, which is I'm not sure I want to go there. And stage three is exploration. Maybe this will work. And stage four is commitment. I'm committed to seeing this change through. The biggest challenge to change is the humans that are involved in the process. Hamish, what are some of the mind games we play with ourselves that keep us from success?
When we look at an organization and those mind games, and you had mentioned transactional analysis, which is the foundation of all of what we teach at Sandler, your organization is going to split roughly, and this is our experience around the world, 20-60-20. So your upper 20% are going to be your change champions. They are going to be on side right from day one. How do we make this work? I love it. Let's rock and roll. The bottom 20% are your change change deniers. Like, even if you're talking about changing the type of coffee that's in the break room, all change is bad. And then in the middle, you've got your 60% who are your fence sitters. And the fence sitters, a lot of them are veterans who have been through too many flavor of the month changes, and they're going to wait this one out a little bit. They're going to see, okay, I want to see some evidence that this is really going to happen. I want to see some evidence that this is actually going to be successful before I fully buy in. And traditional change management has always been focused on coaching, cajoling, and in some cases begging that bottom 20% to get on board.
Right.
What I'd like to share with the audience today is they won't.
There's nothing you're going to be able to do that's going to help them change. They are just going to resist.
They're going to resist, and they are likely the ones who are going to, in my favorite human resources cliche, self-select. And they're the ones who are going to move on right away. What we coach our clients to do is focus on that upper 20%. Get your change champions on board. Pump them up. Get them excited. Get them some quick wins so that middle 60% can start moving upwards, because they will. They'll get on board, but they got to see some proof points first. Now, as your change goes on, that 20-60-20 is going to rebalance, and there'll be some people in that 60% who will fall to the bottom 20%. Initially, they might be, hey, wait and see, and now they're like, you know what? Now that I see it, I actually don't like it at all. And again, they will self-select. Now, the 20-60-20 is a rough split. If you are announcing, like, free beer and pizza every Friday, you're probably going to have more in the change champion category. If you're announcing a 10% salary cut across the board, probably have more in the chain in the bottom 20%
right,
category.
Right.
But 20-60-20 for your standard, we're moving offices, we're adding a new software program, et cetera,
right.
20-60-20 tends to flow that way. The reason why we split in that form is we have scripts. We have scripts that come from our parents and our authority figures. For a lot of employees who were children back in the 1980s when there was a lot of downsizing and they saw their parents lose jobs, they have scripts related to that bouncing around their heads right now.
Mm.
And when we as leaders announce a change, it's not what we think we say, it's what our audience hears that's important. And so we may say everything is going to be sunshine and roses, and what our audience hears, because they're filtering it through the scripts they have in their head, is everything's changing, I'm probably going to lose my job, I need to look out for myself.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think, again, our scripts are something that we may be unaware of, and that resistance
right.
is almost a subconscious knee-jerk reaction that says, I'm not going there. How do we uncover that and address that?
Well, I'm glad you said the word react, Jim, because when we're coming from a script, we're reacting. And, you know, it's like an animal fight or flight. A rabbit is not consciously aware that they should start running away from the wolf. They just do it.
Right.
And that's where, circling back to what we talked about in the first segment about observing behavior, when one of your direct reports, one of your employees comes to you and says, Jim, this is completely insane. I don't know why we're doing this. They're not consciously thinking of saying that. They're reacting. So that's where we give them that permission to be emotional and say what they need to say. And then we start asking them some questions to allow what in transactional analysis they call the adult ego state, which is essentially the higher level consciousness, if you want to think of it. It's part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, where all of our higher level thinking comes from. When we start engaging with anybody, and we'll use the employee as this context, when we start asking them questions, they start having to think about their answers, then they are engaging that prefrontal cortex and they're slowing their emotions down. So we tell our clients, you have a choice in any situation. You can either react, which means you're coming from a script, or you can respond. And when you're responding, you're allowing your higher level brain functions to take over. Now, the response may be, I need to run away from the wolf. Right? That may be a response after you've thought it through, but you're not just making a snap judgment. So one way as leaders we can support our employees is to be observant for those snap judgments, those snap reactions, allow them to have that snap reaction, and then start asking them some very gentle, nurturing questions to help them explore their own thinking.
Mm.
Because there's a Sandler rule that says they can't argue with their own data. So if it comes out of their mouth, it's real. If it comes out of your mouth, you're just being a pushy manager.
So when we ask questions, what we're really doing is facilitating processing information, and that is the essence of buy-in.
Exactly. Exactly. It also relates to how we communicate. And Sandler, we are very big believers in the extended DISC model of communication. And DISC is about how you like to give and receive information. It's a communications model. It has nothing to do with personality. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It's about how do you like to give and receive information? And human beings, in general, are self-interested. And what that means is we tend to communicate in the way that we like to be communicated to. Actually, just coaching one of the leaders I work with who's in the trades, one of the things that they shared in one of our training sessions was they get into trouble because when they're talking to a prospect, they start giving them all this data and making sure that they feel totally safe and totally comfortable because that's the way that my client likes to be communicated to. Mm. And they shared that they can see how they have lost sales because their prospect was ready to buy now and they kept talking.
Kept giving information that the client didn't
want. Exactly. And so the book, what's talked about is understanding, are you a DIS or C, you know, are you a dominant communicator? That's the label. So these tend to be very 30,000 foot and bottom line. What is it and how much does it cost me, or what is it and how is it going to benefit me? The I's, the influencers, they're very people oriented but outgoing, right? They're afraid of social rejection. They don't like any sort of negativity. The S dominance, the supporters and the steady relators, they're very much about we, us, and team. So they want to make sure that whatever is happening, that their team will be supported through this change. And then the C's, conscientious communicators, they're very detail-oriented. I'll give you an example. If I'm a leader and I am announcing that we are going to be implementing a new software system, bottom line, we're implementing a new software program as of January 30th, 2017. It's really exciting. It's got lots of really cool features, bells and whistles. You're going to have a ton of fun playing with it. Now, we are going to set up an FAQ, frequently asked questions, and a help center. We'll be doing a lot of coaching and training to support you and your colleagues getting up to speed on the new software system. Now, let me walk you through point by point how we are going to implement from here to having that software program put in place by January 30th.
Right. Is that an illustration of the approach that someone who is overly direct might be?
Well, that's an illustration of hitting D, I, S, and C in sequence. So first thing I said was, bottom line, software implemented this January 30th. So that's the D's. And it actually goes that your audience, your employees, will listen in D, I, S, and C.
Huh.
So the C's will hang on to the very end to get the details. But if you start with the details, and if you are a C-dominant leader, your natural inclination, like my client, is to start with all the details. The problem is you're going to lose the D's and the I's in your team.
So
they're not going to hang out. But because human beings are self-interested, as soon as I get the information that I want, and I'm a D-dominant, as soon as I get the information I want, I'm going to be physically present for the rest of the announcement, but I'm probably going to be mentally checked out because
right.
I already got my needs met.
Right.
As leaders, we need to make sure that we are communicating not only as how we want to communicate,
right.
but as how everybody wants to communicate. But also we need to be aware that when we say things like we are implementing a new software program, that is going to trigger a bunch of scripts in our team
right.
that are going to cause them to react in certain ways. So we need to be emotionally prepared that not everybody is going to stand up and give us a standing ovation when we announce our change.
So you're touching those influencers when you say this is going to be a ton of fun, you're going to learn a lot. You're hitting those steady relators when you say we're going to give you plenty of time to acclimate to this. And then the high compliance or conscientious folks, we're going to give you all the tools and details that you need to make this successful. And when we craft that message to fit all those behavior styles, that allows people to receive it in their self-interest filter.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Hamish, give your contact information and tell the listeners how they could get your book, Change the Sandler Way.
Thanks, Jim. So best way to get Change the Sandler Way is to go to either Amazon or go to your local Sandler Trainers website and click on the store link. You can purchase a copy right from there. Best way to get a hold of me is by email. And I am Hamish, that's H-A-M-I-S-H, at Sandler, S-A-N-D-L-E-R.com.
All right, we're going to be back with the next segment of the Sandler Training Hour, Entrepreneur Radio, just after this. In Entrepreneur Radio, we introduce you to local and regional entrepreneurs. You get to hear their story and learn some of the things that are happening in our world here in the Treasure Valley. If you're interested in being on that program, give me a call at area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business leader, I have a challenge for you. Ask the constituents you lead the following questions and see if there is continuity in their answers. What are the top three priorities for our organization? What are the non-negotiables and personal idiosyncrasies qualities I have as a leader. Do you feel empowered or closely scrutinized? How would you rate my consistency as a leader on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high? If your constituents do not clearly understand your leadership compass, your effectiveness as a leader is compromised. You're invited to attend a 4-hour workshop on February 22nd in which we will help you create your own leadership compass. The investment is $199 per person. To register, visit crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. That's February, Wednesday, 22nd at 704 East United Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. And welcome to Behind the Business, where we get to hear the story and meet the people behind local and regional businesses. My guest today is Eric Fredrickson. He's the co-owner of Fredrickson Health Insurance Group, along with his sister, Laura Brown, and it's a family business. So
absolutely,
you guys have bought your practice from your dad, and you're working on building it. Tell us a little bit about that whole process.
Absolutely. So we acquired the business from my dad January 1. We have an office staff of 4 additional employees, plus my sister and myself, and we're just a cohesive unit that serves the Treasure Valley in greater Idaho. And we all have our different specialties, but we mostly specialize on individual, Medicare, and group health insurance.
And both you and Laura have your degrees in accounting.
Yeah, accounting.
Are you both CPAs?
We didn't go the CPA world. We've thought about it, but during that time, we were so busy in public accounting, we really didn't have the opportunity to sit for it. And we knew that we didn't want to be lifelong accountants. Therefore, we invested our time in other things.
It's a great foundation to run a small business. So talk to us a little bit about some of the pitfalls that listeners may be unaware of when it comes to individual insurance.
Sure. So a lot of folks here in Idaho are on an individual health insurance plan. And a lot of these folks are having tax credits. Folks who have had tax credits know how difficult it is to coordinate with the Department of Health and Welfare, coordinate with Your Health Idaho, and at the end of the day, qualify or don't qualify for tax credits. So there's a lot of frustrated Idahoans out there right now trying to understand how this is essentially working for them. The big pitfalls that we're seeing in the individual health insurance is if an employee is offered a health insurance plan, let's say through Micron, and Micron's going to pay 80% of the employee's health insurance. They're going to say you're on your own for the rest of the dependents of that family. That can be a pretty big bill for a family of 4 or 5 where they have to cover their spouse and their 2 or 3 kids. If you're offered that and the employer is offering health insurance to the full family, they are not eligible for advanced premium tax credits or Obamacare tax credits. That can be a huge hit to families that really aren't making that much money for a family of 5, and those tax credits have been stripped away from them. We see that every day from folks that, you know, just have a tough time trying to make this affordable.
So is there a way to get around that?
There really isn't in terms of trying to get tax credits. What you can do, though, is there are successes out there with the Christian Health Share Ministries. When folks can't afford a full-cost individual health insurance plan, they don't have access to an employer plan that's affordable to them, we've found that some individuals are investigating the health care ministry option. It's not health insurance, but what it does is it can cover you from a catastrophic level and get people some sort of coverage while we sort out the Affordable Care Act.
Right, right. You know, I've heard about that. I've been a little suspicious. My mother-in-law actually is a member of that, and instead of making payments directly to the firm that manages it, they actually have her write checks to a person who needs coverage. So it's the concept is awesome.
Yeah, it's really neat, and it's cool because what you can see is people helping people, and they base their health insurance, it's really not health insurance, but their ministry off of caring for others. And so folks right now, with how confusing and if they're caught in kind of a bubble, if you will, of health insurance, this is a good way to at least wait out the storm and see if we can get things fixed in the next coming years.
Awesome. Give your contact information, Eric, in case someone listening would like to reach out and ask us some questions.
Yeah, anyone with individual questions, we're always happy to answer those. 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, we're always there answering the phone, 208-375-0009, or you can visit our website at fredhealthins.com.
We'll be back with the final installment of Behind the Business and Eric Fredrickson just after this. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This segment of our program, we get to meet local and regional entrepreneurs, hear their story, and learn some life lessons from their experience. I'm really thrilled to have Lori Forbus in the studio today with me. Lori has a regular listener. Is that true?
Yes.
A regular listener to our program, and she called me up and said, hey, I've got a story I'd like to tell it. it. So I'm delighted to have you here, Lori. Thank you so much. So Lori owns a company called Above and Beyond Cleaning Corporation, and she's got quite a story. Back us up to the beginning. You spent 17 years in corporate America at Albertsons, and then what happened?
And then I just decided I want to be home with my kids more. I thought about it, and I said the only thing that I was really good at was cleaning. So I thought of a catchy name, because I believe the name and the company is really the most important, or one of them.
Yes.
I decided I was going to clean houses.
So to build a business from the ground up, how did you start?
I called my CPA. I called an attorney to get my corporation up and going, the right structure so I'd be built on a foundation and not on sand.
Good.
So smart. I wouldn't set myself
Very
up.
Smart.
I had bookkeepers, and I did a lot of trade work in the beginning because no one knew my name out there, and so I had to start from the ground up.
You know, that is a very effective way. I think most entrepreneurs start in some way by taking some clients in trade just to get your name out there.
Yeah.
Tell us about your proactive prospecting. You were going door to door.
I was going door to door, and I went into a nice neighborhood in Hillcrest Golf Course area, and I dressed up for success, and I would get a lot of no's. So I was getting tired, and I came up to the last home, and I looked in the driveway and saw that there was a Volkswagen. Nothing against Volkswagens, but I'm like, oh, they probably can't afford me.
Right.
So I walked up there anyways, and I met this wonderful woman, and she let me come into her house and clean for her. She was very influential in the community. She knew the mayor, the assistant mayor, attorneys, nurses, doctors. And within 1 month, I had my whole small business started.
Wow, that is awesome. That's a great life lesson there. Don't judge a book by its cover.
Exactly.
That is so true. And the other life lesson there is if you're going to build a business, you got to be willing to accept no's and accept rejection.
If you don't ask, the answer is usually no. But I always ask because I'm not afraid of failure. So 95% of the time that I ask anybody, I get a yes.
That's awesome. And now we fast forward. You have a company now. Tell us the story about how did you evolve from a single operator to a company that employs between, 120 to 60, depending on?
Yes. I went to lunch with my CPA, and I was really tired because I was working two houses a day. He said, Lori, you are working yourself to death. Why don't you be smarter than working harder? And he said, if you got seven buildings, you wouldn't have to work so hard. And a light bulb went off. And I said, I can do this. I went to one business, and they said yes. And it was huge for me because I come from small houses. I worked the property as well as my family. They helped me. And then one time someone called me up, said, I have a Bosnian refugee that needs work. Are you willing to hire them? And I said, absolutely. So then word of mouth went to their family, to their friends. And every time I would get a building, I'd get a phone call.
Wow.
So how do you hire an employee if you don't have a building? How do you get a building if you don't have employees? I didn't even interview them. They just came to me at the right time with the building, and I hired them.
That is really wonderful. So speaking of help, you've been able to help multiple people start their own business.
Talk to us about that. I've helped over 15 of my employees start their own business.
And as competitors or?
Well, they weren't supposed to be, but they are.
So tell us the story. How did that evolve?
I just felt that I was blessed and I would like to bless somebody else. I would share my story and my secrets of how to be successful and get the businesses and close the deals.
And what goes around comes around. So
Absolutely.
You might as well have that abundance that helps other people.
And I figured that there was a lot of buildings and building owners that needed their place cleaned, so they're well-trained.
Right. So did you go residential to strictly commercial, or are you still doing residential?
Well, I kind of got out of the residential because homeowners, you know, want detailed work. And sometimes it's really hard to get those pillows fluffed or their house cleaned to
their standards
because we're women and we're picky. I just decided that I would go into the medical field because knowing that there would always be a need for medical cleaning. So I decided that's the market I wanted to target.
So you seem like, based on your history, unlikely entrepreneur, but you've been just tremendously successful. What do you attribute your success to?
Having confidence, not being afraid of rejection, and hard work.
Great. And vision.
Vision.
You really saw something that you could do. I love that you realize that the one thing you can do is cleaning, and so you'll do that.
Absolutely. And people say, oh my gosh, there's so much competition, you're not going to make it. And I'm like, well, I'm going to make it because I believe in myself, and I know that I'm good.
And there's more than enough work to go around. There's
Absolutely.
Plenty of buildings, and they all need cleaned.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Lori, give your contact information in case there's somebody listening that would like to reach out to you.
Above and Beyond Clean, and our address is 2913 West Overland Road, Boise, Idaho, 83705. And our telephone number is 208-343-3347.
Lori Forbus, you've been a great guest, Lori. We'll be back just after this. And welcome back to the final segment of Behind the Business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local and regional businesses. My guest today is Eric Fredrickson. Eric is the co-owner with his sister, Laura Brown.
Yes.
Your dad's the founder.
Yes.
Fredrickson Health Insurance. And Eric's been talking to us about some of the changes that are occurring. And it strikes me, Eric, that we're in this transition period between the Obama years and the future that's coming. And if you listen to either side, it's either doom and gloom or it's nirvana. Where's the reality, especially when it comes to your industry of health insurance?
Absolutely. So health insurance has made a dramatic change since 2012. There are more people on health insurance, but both sides can agree that health insurance costs have gone up. Premiums have gone up. Whether they be subsidized or not, the total cost is higher for everyone. What we are seeing, like any other industry, is it takes the insurance companies as well as our own government glacially long to get anything done. And so what the experts are really saying is we probably won't see any changes for 2 years. And so folks that are trying to maybe not have health insurance for their business, thinking that Obama or Trump are going to take away the penalties, it's probably not realistic. It's worth hoping for, but probably not realistic. We're advising our clients, if they're over 50 employees and are required to have health insurance, you continue down that road until you hear something definitive. We're also thinking that a Trump presidency could give more flexibility so people can choose what they want to have coverage for, but that can open an additional can of worms. But what we're really hoping for from our standpoint is that people have more choice, so they don't have to have all of the minimal essential benefits, so they can say they can choose to have maternity or not. They can choose to have different things covered.
One of the things that we hear on the news is it gravitating towards more of a local structure as opposed to a federal mandate.
Yeah.
What's the pros or cons there?
It's pretty interesting. You'll hear Dave Armstrong from the Department of Health and Welfare, who kind of runs our insurance program in Idaho in his own way, says if we open it across state lines, Idaho is actually statistically lower health costs than if you were to look at California or New York. So it technically could increase our health insurance costs. I think the point that Dave isn't making, though, is the same levels of coverage aren't going to be met. So if you break down the state barriers, you let people sell across state lines, as long as they allow people to choose what they actually want to have coverage for, kind of like for car insurance or home insurance, you might actually have costs go down. And that's what we're all hoping for, just because right now it's not right that some folks' health insurance bills are more than their mortgage. That's just not right.
Yeah, it's so true. So give your contact information, Eric, in case somebody listening would like to reach out and ask you some questions.
Absolutely. We'd love to talk to you. We're open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. You can call us at 208-375-0009, or you can reach out to us on our website at fredhealthins.com.
Awesome. You've been a great guest.
Oh,
thank you for coming today.
That was so much fun.
And we're going to be back with a final segment of Sandler Training Hour just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business leader, I have a challenge for you. Ask the constituents you lead the following questions and see if there is continuity in their answers. What are the top 3 priorities for our organization? What are the non-negotiables and personal idiosyncrasies I have as a leader? Do you feel empowered or closely scrutinized? How would you rate my consistency as a leader on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high? If your constituents do not clearly understand your leadership compass, your effectiveness as a leader is compromised. You're invited to attend a 4-hour workshop on February 22nd in which we will help you create your own leadership compass. The investment is $199 per person. To register, visit crossroads.com. www.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. That's February, Wednesday, 22nd at 704 East United Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. And welcome back to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. We've been talking with Hamish Knox, a Canadian Sandler trainer who's written two books. One, Accountability the Sandler Way. His newest book is Change the Sandler Way. If you're interested in getting a copy of Hamish's book, you can go to our website, crossroads.sandler.com. We have a store there where you can order it. Hamish has been talking to us about the process of change. He helped us identify the difference between change and transition. Transition is getting humans to adopt to it. Then he talked about the importance of, as a leader, we've got to make sure that we're preparing for change by recognizing the internal scripts that people have. Some people just are going to be resistant to change. And if we follow the process of asking questions, that takes emotion, puts it on the back burner, and allows them to process. So, Hamish, we've got the fundamentals of change down. At least we have a conceptual understanding. Walk us through, how do we make it permanent?
We understand that change is easy, transition is hard. Here's some of the reasons why. Here's how we need to communicate. Okay, now we need to get into, let's do this. Overarching concept here is, as a leader, the success or failure of your change rests with you and in how you set your people up for success. The first challenge that leaders have, or the first part of what we call the Sandler change triangle, is clearly defined objectives. And I know I fall into this trap where I'll say to my team, guys, mountaintop over there. And my team will say, can't even see the mountain, much less the mountaintop. Don't even know where we're going. As leaders tend to be visionaries. We tend to just look at the mountaintop and say, we're going there, which is great, except for our team, we also need to define the base camp. We need to define where are we, because if we don't have a defined base camp, they have nothing to hold on to, because our team members tend to be a little bit more concrete in their thinking and their visualization, which is not good or bad, and it's probably what makes them really good team members for us, because they're supporting our success in reaching the vision that we have. Once you define the base camp, though, you may discover that the mountaintop that you want to hit is actually a couple of mountain ranges over, and you may need to put some interim mountaintops in place. The climb never stops.
Right.
You're always climbing up to that next mountaintop, or hopefully you are, because if not, you're getting surpassed by your competition. Once we've got all that in place, once the leader's got mountaintop, base camp, waypoints in between all defined, now we need to move over into team acceptance. And team acceptance is a lot of what we covered in the first two segments, which is their beliefs and the way they communicate and their scripting. But by delivering the mountaintop, the base camp, and the waypoints in between to your team, you can get that buy-in. And then from there, the last side of the change triangle is creating an action plan. And another challenge leaders have, and this is where the more detailed leaders come in, is they go to their team and say, troops, here's the plan. I have descended from the mountaintop. Here is where we are. Here is where we are going. And here are all of our waypoints in between and the exact steps that we are going to take to get there, which sounds great in theory, but human beings hate to create but love to edit. And as we talked about earlier, they can't argue with their own data, is one of David Sandler's rules. By defining all of the steps along the way, we actually reduce team acceptance, because now the team says, well, that's just Hamish's plan. That's not my plan.
Right.
So when we're building the action plan, is we're actually co-building that action plan with our team, because as good leaders, we have hired really, really good, smart people who may actually have a more effective way to get between base camp and camp one, camp one, camp two, etc., than we could ever think of. So by saying to your team, okay, troops, I've defined the base camp, the mountaintop, and the camps in between. I'd like you to support me in developing the action plan to get from base camp to camp one, etc. Now your team is more engaged because they are developing the plan themselves, and it's their data, and they can buy into it. You as the leader have the ultimate authority to say yay or nay in terms of the action plan, but by giving your team a big stroke, which is to say, I trust you to support me in implementing and executing this change, you increase their acceptance, and you may, in fact, actually find a faster way to implement and execute a change.
So really what you're doing is inviting them to edit the process once you have defined the parameters, which further facilitates buy-in.
Exactly. And one caution here for leaders, silence does not necessarily mean agreement. Silence can mean confusion.
Great point.
So the key thing for establishing the base camp is really to ask yourself three core questions. And the first question is why? Why do we need to change? The second question, which is why now? Why do we need to do this now? And I already identified as that leader who, you know, tends to be the 30,000 foot bottom line. Here it is, and here's what it's going to do. And my team has been very good about coaching me on saying, boss, that's great, but you need a why behind that. And as leaders, we sometimes forget that our motivations are not our employees' motivations.
Right.
So when we're answering the question why, we can increase our team acceptance because they can actually see that there's a reason other than, well, it was Tuesday and I decided we needed a new software program.
Right.
And then the last question is, we have why, and then we have why now, why do we need to do it now? And then the last question is, why that particular change? So why that software program, or why do we need a software program at all? Could we do it some other way that will accomplish the same objective? And so once you figure that out, then we've really got our base camp established, and from there we can start building out towards the mountaintop that we've identified.
So in asking those questions first of ourselves, that equips us to help fill in the blanks for our constituents. Do we also ask them to ask those questions?
Great question, Jim. I would say that unless they are a core member of your leadership team, partner, or a co-owner in the business, probably not, because they're not setting the vision for the business, and they're not ultimately responsible for the success or the failure of the change.
Yeah.
You are as the leaders. You can ask them to build in their own whys, which is where they're building those steps between base camp and camp one, etc. That's where you're going to generate their own whys, but just giving them a blank canvas to work on oftentimes will get you something that
you
probably
didn't want.
Not what you want,
right,
and may end up being detrimental to the business because the people that you're asking are not taking a macro view of the organization.
Yeah, I think sometimes S&C leaders tend to lead by consensus, and I loved your statement. People don't like to create, but they love to edit. So let's do the creating for them and then just give them license to edit.
Exactly.
We've only got a couple of minutes left. Basecamp, what's next?
What I'd like to wrap up with, Jim, is a format that some of your listeners are probably familiar with. It comes out of project management. It's called RACI or RACI, for two different pronunciations, but it's RACI. This is really critical for a successful change. Success, putting together a good RACI format is critical for a successful change. The R, so it's responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed. That's RACI, responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed. I am going to start in the middle of the table, so I apologize in advance to your process-oriented listeners. I will start in the middle of the table with accountable, because here's where change goes sideways. Only one person can be in the accountable box. As soon as you have more than one person in the accountable box, change is going to go sideways, because I'm going to say, well, it's not me, it's Jim. Jim's the accountable one. No, I'm the accountable one. Now, we talked about already, leaders are ultimately accountable for the success or failure of the change, but it doesn't mean that they have to be in the accountable box all the time, especially in those early stages of implementation.
Yeah.
In the responsible box, those are the people who are responsible for executing that stage of the change, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the person who's accountable. So, give you an example, a manager of a department may be accountable, but it's the members of their team who would be in the responsible box.
Mm.
So, manager is ultimately accountable for holding their team responsible to implementing that stage of the change. Down in the second half of the RACI model, consulted and informed. The consulted group are individuals or companies who you are seeking information from and their consultation to implement the change. So that could be an outside coach or trainer. That could be a peer in another department of an organization who's had similar experience. It could be a mentor. But those are the individuals who you are going to go to and say, Jim, I'm looking for your support. I'm implementing this change. How could I implement this more effectively, more successfully, etc.? The informed group, those are the people who are just hearing about the change. They're not really engaged in the change at all. Typically, board members, typically vendors, typically financial institutions, typically clients, you know, letting them know that, you know, we're implementing a new accounting software program, so your invoices might be delayed a little bit. Now, if the change starts to go sideways, some of the informed group could very well become consulted very quickly. Like if the change is going sideways, the board may step in and say, okay, you need to keep us in the loop on this. We're going to be managing this from here. Or the financial institution may step in and say, you know, we want to be more consulted in this change because it's not going the way that you said it was going. So if a leader set that RACI model out right up front and then allows their team to build that as part of their action plan.
Fantastic information. What a nice sequence of chain reactions that helps us recognize that the power of change is in our hands, and it's up to us. If change will succeed, it's up to the person who is engineering and rolling out that change. Hamish, thanks for being on the program. Give our listeners your contact information and how they might go about getting a copy of one of your books.
Thanks for asking, Jim. Best way to get a hold of me is by email. I am at Hamish. That's H-A-M-I-S-H at Sandler, S-A-N-D-L-E-R .com. Best way to get a copy of the book is to either go to Amazon or to go to your local Sandler Trainer's website, click on the store link, and order a copy from there.
Awesome. Been a delight to have you on the program. We could have easily spent two full programs on this. I'm going to have you back, Hamish. Are you willing to come?
I'd love to come back, Jim. Thanks for having me.
All right. And listeners, thank you for tuning into the program this week. And if there's any topic you'd like to hear us cover in more detail, just reach out to me at area code 208-429-9275. That's Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275, or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. Have a great weekend. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a two-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275.